G'day everyone, and welcome to another DUC Migrating to Australia podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by Rachel Bickley and Lisa Chambers. We're going to hear Rachel's story. Rachel and Lisa, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi.
Very, very quiet. Hi. Now, Lisa, you'll be happy about this one because you've got another South Australian to chat to. So what we'll do at the end of this one, after I've asked her lots and lots of interesting questions, I might get you to ask her some things and you guys can talk a little bit about South Australia. But Rachel, this is pretty exciting because you had your you're one of the first, I believe, people who got their visas granted just after the pandemic. But let's learn a little bit about yourself. Let's hear about your journey. And it started off with a working holiday visa.
Yeah, that's right. So when I was younger, I decided to take a bit of a career break, went backpacking through Southeast Asia, and then just found myself doing the working holiday visa in Australia because, you know, why not? Very easy to get if you're under 30, or I think it's 35 now. And I just ended up spending 2 years in Australia on that working holiday visa. I got to travel a lot, got to see a lot of the country, which was amazing. And I just, didn't want to go home, basically. So I did my best to try and get sponsored, but it didn't happen. I wasn't in a position to apply for any other visas at that time. So when my visa was up, I did have to go home, unfortunately. But straight away, I got to work on figuring out how I was going to get back to Australia on a more long-term basis.
Perfect. Now, Rachel, you have an occupation that I would say shocked quite a few people when you got this granted, when lots of other occupations were not granted, I guess. What is your occupation?
So I am a librarian.
Perfect. I'm always scared of librarians. I think like many people, you've shushed enough people. Are you in the role of shushing people, or what is your role?
So contrary to what a lot of people believe, you know, my role is not shushing people, nor do I actually do a lot with books. So I'm an academic librarian, which means I work in a university. I actually work at a managerial level, leading a team. And to sum it up, what we do is we support a lot of the research activity in the university. So we offer support with things like finding information and also what we'd call strategic publishing decisions and things around research impact and all of that kind of high-level research stuff that goes on.
Excellent. But your occupation when you migrated is librarian, and does that cover like just people who work in a library, or was the ANSCO code more directed at the tasks that you just mentioned then?
Yeah, so it's I did have to do the skills assessment it is directed at people who do a certain level of tasks. So when you go into a library, a lot of the people you actually see there will be in other roles, maybe library assistant. So a librarian is somebody who has a certain level of qualification and is working at a certain level. So it's, you know, not generally the person who's going around shushing people. Not that that happens much anymore.
and what is a level of, you know, qualification for a librarian?
So people are quite surprised to hear this, but it's a postgraduate diploma or a master's in librarianship or information management or something very similar, on top of having an undergraduate degree in another subject.
All right. So you work in a library at uni. I've got to ask it because I'm sure a few people will be interested in this. Is it like Friends, where you've got a section there where people have a bit of a pash behind a certain area of the books? Is that true or not true?
I suspect it probably is true. There's certainly plenty of potential areas for that in the library that I work in. So I don't delve too deep into that.
Yeah, there you go. So where are you originally from?
I'm from Birmingham originally. Okay. But I've lived around lots of different places in England. And I was in London before I came out here.
Yeah, awesome. So you mentioned before you're on the work and holiday visa. So how old roughly, you know, like were you, I don't know, can't ask women their age. So roughly how old were you when you came over on the work and holiday visa?
So I was on the older side. So I don't mind sharing. I was 21 when I came over, 31 when I went home. So as I said, I know now they've upped the age, I think, to 35. But at the time, that was the kind of upper level.
Hang on, did you say you were 21?
No, I was 29 to 31.
Oh, perfect. I was going to say it's a long, long working holiday. All right, cool. Yeah, so that's good though, because you've got a bit of life experience and you made the most of it. So where'd you arrive first on your work and holiday visa?
So I went to Brisbane first. I'll tell you why. I hadn't really done any planning. I grew up watching Neighbours, where they show you Melbourne looking lovely and sunny and beautiful all the time. So obviously in my head, I'm like, great, I'm going to rock up to Melbourne. So I'm in Southeast Asia with, my tropical weather clothing. It's early September. I'm planning where I'm going to go. And I decided to actually do a little bit of research. And I realized that Melbourne in September is not going to be that warm. So essentially, that's how I ended up in Brisbane. I just thought, where's somewhere that's not going to be probably absolutely freezing at this time of year? So it was entirely accidental.
It's a great call, because September, my birthday's in September. And it's very hit and miss. Sometimes it's a scorcher and sometimes it's cold, but that's Melbourne. So all right, you went to Brizzy. Were you working as a librarian, or were you just doing different occupations? What were you doing?
I didn't do any library work at all. I did try when I first got there to get something, but with the working holiday visa, you've got the restriction of 6 months with the same employer. And so, a lot of employers are understandably not keen to bring you into those kind of professional level jobs. So I did a lot of the typical backpacker jobs that you might imagine. So I've done, to give you a few examples, I've picked peas in Mildura. I have been one of those charity fundraisers who stands on the street in Brisbane and tried to stop you to get you signed up to their charity. I've worked in a factory handling manky potatoes and onions. That's just a few of them, Wes. There were quite a few different hustles that I did while I was there.
How do you pick peas up? You don't pick them up one at a time, surely. Is it like a scoop or something?
No, you do pick them by your fingers, the pods.
Are you deciding which pea makes it to the frozen peas and then which peas doesn't? Is that what it
Essentially,
was?
Yes. Yeah, that's also what you're doing with the potatoes and onions in the factory. You're picking out the ones that are not good enough to go to the shops, go to Woolies. God.
Sounds like a photo that would be like part of one of those impossible puzzles, the impossible puzzles that you can't solve, like with baked beans or peas. It'd be hard to identify. But anyway, this isn't a podcast of peas. This is a podcast of migrating. Where'd you go after Brizzy?
I did a little bit of traveling after Brizzy. So I ended up just going down to Melbourne. Again, grew up watching Neighbours. So I really wanted to go on the Neighbours tour, which did not disappoint. That was something ticked off my list. Ended up making my way along the Great Ocean Road, found myself in Adelaide, not ever expecting that I would end up coming back here to live. That's where I ended up doing the potatoes and onions. I did quite a little bit of going back and forth places. I was based in Brisbane for most of the 2 years, actually, because I felt quite at home there. But I would do a lot of traveling as well. So I'd work for a few months and then travel and then go back to Brisbane mostly.
And when you say Brisbane, do you mean Queensland or just sort of around Brisbane?
Around Brisbane. So I, the first year I was there, I rented a room in a share house in Spring Hill, if anyone's familiar with the area, which was just a great place to live. And they had a spare room when I went back for my second year. So yeah, I'd say for about 10 months out of the 2 years, I was just kind of living in Brisbane, and maybe, going away for a few weeks, do a bit of traveling between jobs, but I wasn't sort of going around doing hostels the whole 2 years like some people do.
Fair play. All right, so you loved it. Then you head back to you went back to Manchester or London when you came back?
I went to Leeds for 3 months. So obviously after 2 years in Australia, going to Yorkshire for the winter is the best idea. It was where I got a temporary job working as a librarian. And I was very conscious that I'd been out of the occupation for a few years. And for the sake of my visa, I needed to get at least a year's kind of up-to-date experience. So yeah, I found myself in Leeds just working a temporary job and then got a job in London.
Rachel, I've got to ask, when you applied for your visa, you'd have had to do an English test.
Yes.
What score does a librarian get? I would assume it would be quite high. What did you get?
I got 4 marks.
What, like perfect 90? Would you do perfect 90.
PTE.
And what did you get?
Perfect 90 across the board.
Yeah, I figured that one. Did I tell you what? You're going to upset a few tradies here that are going to be like, you know, we need to build houses, not help people searching books, and then struggling with the English, and then you smash. So what score? What was your end score?
God, it was like so points? Long. Oh, points-wise, I think I was on possibly 90, 95.
That's massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a big score. That probably explains why you were, like, picked, because you would have had a good one. Who got you here from our team?
It was the absolute Wonder Woman that is Jenny Baker.
Oh, yeah. JB is the victim of lots of people heading over to Oz. Well, I wouldn't say the victim or the villain, depending on who you ask, if you ask the family members and everything. How did your family take it when you said, you know, obviously that you missed them for a couple of years, and then you came back and then you made the choice to migrate? Were they like, yes, Rachel, we'll see you in a couple of years? Or were you like, no, guys, this is it. I'm going back to make a life out of it?
I think they kind of realized that I was going to be going back before I really kind of articulated it. You know, they could see how much I was loving life in Australia when I was there on my working holiday visa. They knew that I had the travel bug as well. I think my parents especially probably suspected that I would end up living long-term somewhere overseas. But they've been really supportive, like, all the way through. Like, you know, you hear some stories of people who struggle having the conversation with their family, and they sometimes get, you know, very upset family members who almost try to guilt trip them about going. That wasn't the case for me at all. I know they miss me, but they've always been like so supportive of me following my dreams, of following my heart. And my parents brought me up to be very independent. So, yeah, they were behind me 100%.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I always get myself confused with this, right? So, my parents, when I took off to travel, they were very supportive, I guess. They were just like, yeah, you know, you've got to fund it yourself. I was like, yeah, sell me panel van. But then I was like a bit upset thinking about it. They didn't really kick up too much of a fuss and beg me to stay. thinking about it now, I kind of wish that they did at least put a little bit of a fight, not just, all right, you fund it yourself, you have to sell your car. But anyway, that's a bit of a food for thought there, Rachel, with the reaction. So, you've started the visa process, okay?
Yep.
You put your skills assessment through. Back then, do you remember roughly how long the skills assessment process took for a positive assessment?
I think it took about 12 weeks.
Gosh, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was about 12 weeks.
So let's run through it. So 12 weeks, you're into it. You've got your skills assessment done. You're then looking to you've got your English test, which you did really, really well with.
Yeah.
What were your timelines from, you know, lodging to getting the visa granted and all that sort of stuff?
So I lodged my expression of interest to South Australia for the 491 in January 2020. Kind of expecting that I'd be moving to Australia later that year. Obviously that didn't happen. So I lodged in January 2020 the expression of interest, and then obviously, you know, borders closed, pandemic started, and nobody really knew what was going to happen. So it was a bit of a surprise in June 2020 when out of the blue I got an invite to actually lodge the visa. Yeah. It was very last minute. I think what they were trying to do was get them through before the end of the financial year.
Yeah.
So I remember Jenny had obviously been working all night to get people's visas in, so we very quickly lodged it. So that was June 2020, and then didn't hear anything.
Okay. Till when?
So in April 2022, I kind of made the decision that I wanted to go ahead and do something which I think used to be quite popular. I don't know if it still is now, but the front loading. So getting your police checks and your health, your medical check done, and actually adding that to your visa application so that the case officer doesn't have to request it. It's kind of all there. The thing with doing that is they expire after, I think it's 1 year.
Correct.
Yeah. So obviously, at that time when everything was so uncertain and, you know, you had no idea if it was going to be another year or two. I know the advice was really not to do that, but I just got to the point where, you know, I'd put my visa application in through the invite in June 2020. It was now April 2022. My whole life had been in limbo, essentially. And I just kind of made the decision that if I was going to have to wait another year, it just wasn't meant to be. So I decided to go ahead and get the police checks and get my medical checks done. So that was in April 2022. And I did those not really expecting anything of it. And then a couple of days later, out of the blue, Jenny called me about 10 to 7 in the morning to say that your visa has been granted.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was so amazing because back then there wasn't like a lot of visas. I remember you're going to hate when I say this, Rachel, but I remember doing a webinar and trying to explain to people that, you know, like it's been really tough. And obviously there's a pandemic going on. And because you're on the Facebook group and you shared it with everyone, and people were like, you know, they're screaming for tradies or doctors and nurses, but yet a librarian gets a visa granted in the midst of a pandemic. It was crazy. But now you've explained your role a bit more. Kind of makes a bit more sense. But I still think that you're extremely lucky to, you know, to be at the top of the list.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it seems hard to understand what kind of logic immigration worked to sometimes, doesn't it?
I'm not sure there is a logic. I think I don't know. Hopefully they don't listen to this podcast. But yeah, I'm not really sure what the logic is, or the fairness as well. I think that's a bit of an issue we got at the moment. You know, like today's the 4th of the 3rd, 2024, when we're recording this, and the logic of it just doesn't make sense. We've got so many clients that have been putting visas in and just waiting for visa grants. Lots of people, got EOIs in. It's tough, but, you know, congratulations, you got here, and that 2 years was challenging. Would you say that the emotional side off that, waiting for that time, was harder than, you know, the skills assessment? Obviously the English test wasn't too hard for you, but, you know, was that the hardest part, just waiting?
I think so. And especially at that time when there was just so much uncertainty, you know, the Australian borders were closed for the vast majority of that time. So there's just kind of no end in sight. And it's the emotional toll of waiting. You feel like your life's in limbo. So, you know, by this point I was in my mid-30s and I'm thinking about, you know, I want to buy a house at some point. I'm single, maybe I want to find a partner, but you can't get on with any of those things. You're just kind of waiting. And I know I've seen on the Facebook groups, there's people who've got, you know, houses to sell and they've got kids and their schooling to think about. And yeah, I think that waiting and the uncertainty is really difficult.
Oh, it's challenging. And it's actually challenging on, you know, on my team as well, because I actually put a post on the DEC Club, just a video saying, you know, like it is tough for our team, you know, because we feel the emotional, you know, the emotions with it. And it's been a really challenging, I think anyone who's in the migration business, it sounds like it's really fun and everything like that. And, you know, it's rewarding when you get results like yours, Rachel, but it is, it's such a challenging job when there's no consistency from immigration. It does make it challenging. And people do struggle with the English test. You know, getting documents for a skills assessment and a visa, it's hard. I mean, that's why we set the client portal up, to try and make it easy for them. But it is all challenging. So you mentioned, you know, like what it was like, you know, the pandemic and everything. And in your mind, do you have your work-life balance now? Is like South Australia and exactly what you wanted for your work-life balance now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously everybody's experiences will be different depending on where they work and what they do. But for me, you know, I work hard, but I work within my hours. You've got beautiful beaches and so much that you can do outside of work. You can go to the beach after work or at the weekend. The one thing that I do, The one negative with the work-life balance here, and again, this might be different for other people, but they're a bit stingy with the annual leave at my place. So I get four weeks accrued every year, plus the public holidays, but a couple of the days of my annual leave have to be used for the Christmas closure. And that I got quite a bit more in my last job. So yeah, a little bit stingy with the annual leave, which is a little bit frustrating when, like, later on this year, I'm going to go back to the UK to visit for a couple of weeks. So it takes a big chunk out. But at the same time, you know, when you can go to the beach after work or at the weekend, you're kind of getting a little bit of holiday vibe on a regular basis, you know, little and often. So there is that upside as well.
When do you plan to go back to the UK and visit?
I am planning to come back in June of this year.
Yeah, so you're doing the winter, you're going to leave the winter in SA and head back for the summer in the UK.
That's exactly why I picked June. Yes, that's the plan.
Yeah, it's really common. You'll just see, like, the flights just go up a little bit, like, around that time. It's when we always go back as well, because my wife's family are in Devon, Torquay, whatever it's called.
Oh, nice.
It does get busy around then, but it is worth it because then you try and get the sun. Because let's, you know, with South Australia, you guys have had quite a hot summer this year. Let's just let the listeners know, I don't know, what the weather's been like the last month, what you're expecting this weekend. Just, I don't know, if you don't know it, not a problem, but if you do remember it, great.
Yeah, so it's been pretty hot. I've found it's gone up and down a little bit, actually. So, you know, in an average week, in the past month, we've had maybe a couple of days where it's a high of about 25 and then a few days where it's late 30s. I think we've had a couple of 41s, 42s in the past month as well. And yeah, we were just talking earlier. So it's for this weekend, I think it's predicted to be about 37. Saturday and Sunday, so I will absolutely be at the beach for that one. I think
it's awesome though. South Australia is good because it's a dry heat. It's not a humid heat like up north. That's what I I'm not a big person with humidity. That's why Vic and South Australia are good, but it's always a little bit hotter. But Lisa, who's going to join us in a minute for the podcast, she's a bit like the weather lady, or she's like my weather lady, because she always tells me what the weather's happening for whatever we're talking about. And I'm thinking, oh, great, I'm in Melbourne, so I'm going to get that in the next couple of days. It's kind of good. I can sort of prepare.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a hot Sunday for me in Vic. So, all right, you mentioned I'm going to be a little bit cheeky here. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to. You mentioned that while you're on the while you're waiting for the visa to be granted, it was tough because you didn't want to meet a partner.
Yeah.
What's it like? I mean, again, you do not have to answer this question, but I'm sure there'll be other people in your situation. What's it like, you know, relationship-wise and being single in Adelaide compared to, like, the UK and dating and everything?
Okay. I mean, I don't know how long we've got. I could go on for a while about this. I'll do the short version. In many ways, like, the approach to dating is very similar. So, you know, online dating is what everybody does now. If people are doing it in the UK, I'd say it's the same apps that we use back in the UK. I think in other cities it might be different, but I say in Adelaide there's no particular preference for one of the apps. It's just everybody's on all of them, and you will see everybody. So obviously coming from London, which has a much larger population than Adelaide, I do notice that. You see the same faces coming up when you're swiping through. But yeah, it's pretty similar in that sense. I can't speak for what it's like going out to clubs and that kind of thing and meeting people that way, because you know, that's in the past for me. I have a bedtime of about 9:30 now, so I'm not really in the clubs. But there are other things. So I went speed dating a little while ago. So that was quite fun. My friends and I went to a comedy night for singles a few weeks ago. It's called Love at First Joke. I think that's something that they do a few times a year, and they even got people up on the stage doing some, like, funny little games. So it's a few comedians, and they do their little routines, but they get people up on stage and have a few games where people talk about, you know, like, the worst chat up line they've ever had. And they do a thing where they get a guy up and blindfold him. It's a little bit like Blind Date in the UK, if anyone remembers that. He sort of has to ask questions, and then, you know, they they sort of get a match and then they get given a drinks voucher and they can go to the bar and have a chat, kind of thing. So that was pretty fun. In terms of the actual, now, if anybody's on TikTok, they might have seen a trend on TikTok recently where there's been a lot of young women, like British and Irish young women and American young women who are maybe there on the working holiday visa, talking about what dating in Australia is like. It's like that stereotypical Aussie laid-backness kind of comes into the dating scene a little bit. You sometimes have to work hard to like keep a conversation going. You get a few kind of, you know, answers back that don't really have returning questions. You might have to kind of, if you want to go on a date, you might have to kind of organize it yourself, which would be very interesting. That's very different to what I experienced in London.
What do you mean?
So just a very, like, you'd be having a conversation on the apps and it's not just me who's found this, you know, it was a thing on TikTok and my friends have found it as well. They might sort of answer, you know, the etiquette with online dating, right, is that you are meant to, you know, ask lots of questions and keep the conversation going. But often you just get sort of a one word or, you know, one sentence answer back and you have to kind of, you don't get a question in return. And it's not because they're not interested. It just seems to be a very kind of, you know, laid back approach to to things.
Sounds a bit like married life, to be honest.
It's very interesting. It took me by surprise when I first got here. You just sort of mistake it as being a lack of interest. And I realised it's actually not. It's just, just a different approach, a different attitude. So, The search continues for my future hubby. So I don't know, maybe one day you'll be watching me on Married at First Sight Australia. You never know.
Oh, there you go. Well, I hope you do get on that. That'd be amazing. The librarian from Manchester who picked peas once in her life is now picking a prince. You know, it's got love written all over it.
Yeah. I think the series has just started in the UK, the Australian ones. I don't know if people have been watching it, but they're pretty terrible. It's pretty terrible.
What TV? My wife says the same. Like TV is just like not very good in Aussies. Do you agree? Or
I mean, I think now we have like streaming, and you know, everybody watches Netflix and you know the other channels like that. So I don't think it's so much of a big deal. But yeah, it's not great. There's not a lot of kind of Aussie TV that I would sit and watch. So it's Married at First Sight, Neighbours. I do have a soft spot for Neighbours still now that they brought it back. I don't really watch anything else, to be honest, that's, you know, specifically from the Aussie TV channel. But we're not here to watch TV. We're here to, you know, go and enjoy the beach and enjoy the weather.
What about making mates? Like, is it hard moving over by yourself and finding a few mates or friends?
Yeah, so it has been surprisingly hard. So in terms of like moving over by myself, I didn't find that daunting really. I moved to Australia before, though obviously it was different. I'm just going with a backpack. I've traveled a lot by myself. I moved around England a lot by myself. So the actual moving by myself, people say, oh, you are so brave, but I didn't find it that daunting. And again, because I'm quite happy doing things by myself. At first, I was quite happy just exploring Adelaide, going places by myself. We are social creatures. And I started thinking, you know, I need to get some mates around me. I have found it difficult. I found it more difficult than I have when I've moved to other places in England. There's kind of a bit of a joke that you hear in Adelaide sometimes that, like, one of the first questions someone will ask a new person is, what school did you go to? So there's kind of a joke that, you know, people stick with their high school mates. And I have seen that a bit. A lot of people have very long-standing friendship groups and maybe aren't necessarily that interested in bringing a new person in. So it's taken me a while. I would say it took me a year of trying different things to start meeting some friends. First, I tried the meetup.com website. So that's what I always used to use when I moved somewhere new in England. So if anyone's not familiar with meetup.com, it's a site where people can set up different groups, social groups. Sometimes it'll be around particular interests, or sometimes it'll be just around social stuff. But I found maybe in other cities it's different, but it doesn't seem that active in Adelaide, or not in the things I was interested in anyway. So I turned to Facebook groups, and for women, there's a lot of Facebook groups that are for other women looking for new friends. I don't know what it's like for guys. I don't know if there's many equivalents, but certainly there's quite a few Facebook groups, and it's a mixture of people like me who've moved here from overseas, people who've moved from interstate, or just people who are open to meeting new friends, expanding their friendship circle. So I joined some of those and just started going to events. You've got to just kind of, you know, put yourself out there, and it's a bit scary, you know, walking into a bar to go and meet a bunch of people you don't know. But you take that initial step, you start chatting to people, you make friendships that sort of then go out of that space. So it took me a while, but now I've got a nice little group, a mixture of other immigrants and people from Adelaide as well. So it's quite a nice mixture. We've got a group chat where people just throw in, you know, things they want to go to, and fringe events or winery tours or dinners. We do a lot of all of those things. It's nice. It took me a while, but now I've got a little group.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I think like me, you know, Victoria, Melbourne, you know, Adelaide used to be, I guess, a small like country town. It's how we used to refer to it, because you said you went up the Great Ocean Road and then you went, you know, then you hit Adelaide that way. For those listening, the Great Ocean Road starts in the wonderful state of Victoria and then takes you through along the coast, the Great Ocean Road, hence the name, and then you end up in South Australia. So it's actually not that far to drive from Adelaide to Melbourne. It's quite common. And there is like a little rivalry between the Victorians and the South Australians, pretty much like the people from New South Wales and Queensland.
Yes.
It's good. But what I'm going to do, let's bring Lisa in, because I think, you know, you've both been in South Australia for a while. Let's have a little bit of a chat about South Australia. So, Lisa, anything you want to sort of throw in and ask Rachel?
Yeah. Hi, guys. Thanks, Rachel, for joining. Yeah, so I've been here for like coming up to 5 years, and I think you came here in 2022.
Yeah.
So we got a bit of a different perspective, being that I've been here for a few more years, but also you live in the CBD and are single, young, free and single. I live more in the south near the beaches, and I've got a family. So I just feel like we have probably different lives that we live. What kind of things do you do in your free time?
So I think I've talked about the beach loads already, but I love the beach. You know, I've always my whole life wanted to live by the beach. And even though I live in the CBD, or the city centre, I suppose is what we'd say in the UK. One of the wonderful things about Adelaide is that the beaches pretty near the city are fantastic. So in half an hour, I can be half an hour on a bus, train or tram, I can be at the beach. So like I said earlier, you know, throughout the warmer months, I'll be there every weekend. Even in the winter, I'll go there for a walk. You know, it might not be really warm enough to sit on the beach or go in the sea, certainly not warm enough to go in the water in winter, but that's something that I like to do a lot. I've also gotten back into running, something I used to do when I was younger, and since I've moved here I've gotten back into it, because there's so many nice races in lovely areas. So I did the McLaren Vale 10k last April. And that's a really lovely route through the vines. There's a fantastic run in September called City to Bay, which is where they close off all the roads between the city centre and Glenelg, one of the beachside areas, and you run that way. And having done a couple of those, I decided now's the time for a half marathon. So in about 6 weeks' time, we'll be back at McLaren Vale for the half marathon route. So what I'm doing a lot of at the moment is getting up early on a Sunday, getting my running shoes, my running vest on, and running a really nice kind of cycle path route out from the city out to the beach. So a bit painful getting up early in the morning and doing that run, but it's kind of worth it when you're greeted with the sight of the ocean, and it feels really good. So those are the two big things that are taking up my time at the moment, along with the Adelaide Fringe. So this is probably my favourite time of year in Adelaide, because the weather's still beautiful, and we've got the Fringe. So that takes place between mid-February, mid-March. I believe it's the largest arts festival in the Southern Hemisphere. I keep hearing that when I go to the Fringe shows. And it's, you know, comedy shows, music shows, circus, cabaret, loads of nice food and drink places. So I've been seeing as many fringe shows as possible at the moment as well. So I've got plenty keeping me busy.
I think it's called Mad March is what it's referred to in Adelaide in March, because it all just goes a little bit mad.
Yes.
So there's tons and tons of things to do at this time of year because the weather, well, it's still hot. I'd say the beginning of autumn is very hot still for this time of year. But normally it starts to settle down a bit. The evenings start to draw in a bit. So then we have all these festival stuff that kicks off in the beginning of autumn. And just so you mentioned McLaren Vale, that's a big wine region, which is about 40 minutes south of the CBD, which actually is just around the corner of where I live.
Yes.
And it's amazing because you go up in the hills, you've got all the vines everywhere, but you've also got the sea view. You can just look down. It's just fields and fields and fields of vines. And then you've got the sea, and what an amazing place to live because you've got the city that's always buzzing, got tons of stuff to do. But then all the way down, you've got beaches that you can get to, you can drive to, you can get a train to. I guess maybe you might train it to Brighton sometimes or Seacliff.
Yeah, so I tend to go to Seacliff. So really nice and easy on the train. The train station's quite close to the beach. So, yeah, that's usually my go-to. But, you know, further south, those beaches are stunning. And like you said, you've got McLaren Vale, the wine region just there as well. And so many wine tours and winery events. I've done a few of those with friends. So we went to one in the spring, which is called like Sparkling Spring. And it was a few of the wineries in the Adelaide Hills sort of put on an event together. And you just pay for your ticket. There's a bus picks you up from the city, takes you around the different wineries. And like you said, it's beautiful with the vines. If you need Instagram pics, that's the place to go. Go to one of the wineries and get your Instagram pics, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. And so I live near Port Nolunga. That's my favourite beach. What's your favourite beach?
So my go-to is Seacliff. So in terms of getting to the beach on public transport, I think Seacliff is my favourite. It's pretty quiet. The water's usually pretty nice. But going further afield, absolutely down your way, absolutely beautiful. I stayed in Moana last year when I did the McLaren Vale race. I stayed down in Moana, which is a little bit further south from you. And that was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, the whole coastline, I think from Christie's Beach down to Maslin is probably the best, I would say. The metro coastline, which you can get to quite easy from the CBD, and that's all quite flat.
Yes.
The sand's quite flat. But then the further south you get these kind of dramatic cliffs that you have to walk down quite big steps sometimes to get down to these really nice beaches. And they just get like quieter and quieter and quieter the further south you go, and then you go further south and you've got like, you know, Rapid Bay and all that kind of stuff as well. Have you ventured that far south yet?
Not quite. I think Moana is the furthest south I've been yet. But there's so much more to explore, isn't there? I've got so many places, not just around Adelaide, but in South Australia on my list to go to as well.
Try and get yourself down to Second Valley. That's probably like an amazing place to visit. So again, you know, we have the wineries, so we have some great places to eat, like both in the CBD and then, you know, down towards where we've got the wineries in the south at McLaren Vale, and then in the north in the Barossa as well. Have you got a favorite food, a favorite place to eat?
So mine would be a bit of a niche recommendation because I eat a vegan diet, but I was pleasantly surprised at the number of vegan places or places with really good vegan options in and around Adelaide. So it's hard to pick some favourites. There's a lovely cafe in the CBD called Veggie V, which is all vegan. They do amazing salads, and like in the winter, like their curries and stuff like that are perfect for lunch. If you're into like burgers, that kind of thing, there's a place in Rundle Mall, like the main shopping area in the city, called Two Bit Villains. There's a bit like American diner type things. You can get milkshakes and soda, and they're all either vegan or vegetarian. And another, but probably my favourite place for breakfast is a cafe called Sarah's Sisters, and that's in Semaphore. So that's, I suppose, one of the northern beaches in the metro area, isn't it? You can get the train out there. And they have just amazing, amazing options. So, yeah, I was actually pleasantly surprised at how many good places there are that I can eat here.
Yes, Semaphore's a really great place as well. It's like being on holiday.
It is, with the little train and everything. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. You've got a few holiday vibe type places. You've got Semaphore, Glenelg, which is where the main drag of the people go to the beach. And I'd say like Port Nalunga definitely has a bit of like a holiday vibe as well. Much Definitely. More laid back, much more walk around without your shoes on type feel down this way.
And I know that there's some really nice snorkeling in Port Nalunga as well, isn't there? I haven't actually done it yet, but I know the snorkeling there is good. You see some good things.
Yeah, yeah. And it's nice to have a mix, I think, in Adelaide as well, because you can go into the city and there's definitely places where you can go and dress up.
Yeah.
It's definitely a place where people make an effort, I think. I think sometimes people say that Adelaide... No, sorry, I'll go back. Some people say that Australia, people don't make an effort with their appearance. But I would definitely say that in Adelaide, people do make an effort with their appearance in certain situations.
Yeah, definitely, I'd agree with that.
But there's also situations where you can be very laid back as well. Yeah, and it kind of depends on how you feel like being on that particular day. Like you could go to like... a really nice restaurant and dress up, or you could go to a surf life-saving club and just chill out.
Absolutely.
All right, so gonna wrap up shortly, but just wanted to know, is there anything that you miss from England? So for me, I've mentioned it before, I miss like a kind of meal deal from Boots or Tesco's. How
I think she
you?
Said the boys.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? I hadn't thought about meal deals until you mentioned them. But yeah, you don't get them here, do you?
No, you don't. There's a business opportunity there.
There is. And do you know what else there is a business opportunity for? So back home, the app Vinted, where you download it and people sell their old clothes there. So it's like a virtual charity shop, and you can search by brand and just put your like size in and just see what's available. And I had so many clothes from there. And here there just is not an equivalent. There's a couple of apps that sort of say they do the same thing, but they're just not as easy to use and don't have as much stuff. I think they're more used by the people who are trying to make money off vintage clothes rather than Vinted, which is literally people just, you know, selling stuff that we're taking to a charity shop. So there's definitely a business opportunity there if anyone fancies setting up an equivalent to the Vinted app. There'll be plenty of customers. I get complimented on dresses that I've bought from there all the time, and I tell people about it and they're like, oh, why don't we have that here? So there's a market, definitely.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. I think it's been a wonderful podcast. It's been a lot of fun, Rachel. So just wish you all the best with your time in Australia and everything like that. Lisa, thank you again for organizing all these podcasts and all the work you do behind the scenes. So guys, hope you enjoyed it, and we'll get the next one out as quick as we can. All right, take it easy, everyone. Catch you later.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.